Hello and welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm Jason Harris, Managing Editor for Oncology Fellows, a magazine by and for Oncology Fellows. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's special episode, Richard J. Bleicher, MD, Director of the Breast Fellowship Program and lead of the Breast Cancer Program at Fox Chase Cancer Center, is speaking with his friend and former fellow, Salvatore Nardello, D.O. Dr. Nardello is Medical Director at Melrose Wakefield Breast Health Center and an Assistant Professor of Surgery at Tufts University School of Medicine. The two men discuss finding a mentor, what to look for in a fellowship program, and the benefits of fellowship for both academic and community oncologists.
So welcome, everybody. I'm Dr. Rick Bleicher. I'm a breast surgeon at the Fox Chase Cancer Center. I've been here for about 16 years, and I'm the fellowship director for the program at Fox Chase. And so I want to also introduce my now friend and colleague, former fellow, Sam Nardello. Sam?
Thank you very much for having me. We're really excited to put on this podcast. My name is Salvatore Nardello. I was a fellow of Dr. Bleicher's 5 years ago and now work in the Boston area. I work for Tufts Medical Center Community Care as well as Tufts Medical Center in the Surgical Oncology Department as a breast surgical oncologist. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. So Sam, you know, maybe we should talk a little bit about background first. What is it? Obviously, you became interested in breast before fellowship. So what is it that sort of brought you to that?
That's a great question. I get that a lot. And I say the same answer every time. And that's during general surgery, it's a great opportunity to see a lot, and hopefully you have a mentor that takes you under their wing and shows you something that you really fall in love with. And breast surgical oncology was something I fell in love with. As a second year resident, I saw that there was a lot of continuity of care with the patients. There was an added level of compassion and deep respect that you have for the patients that are going through such a tough journey. Not only was there the surgical side of things, but there was the emotional side of things, which I fell in love with, the research. And I felt that breast surgical oncology just fit my personality best. And it was a field that was truly evolving with time. And that's ultimately what made me decide to do a breast surgical oncology fellowship, was to learn more, to understand the data more, so that it could translate into being able to take care of patients for the rest of my career.
So was there ever any consideration when you were thinking about fellowships as to whether there would be a benefit to just going out and just doing breast, right from residency instead of doing a fellowship, as opposed to spending the actual time, commitment, costs, et cetera, of doing a fellowship?
Sure. I heard that a lot from other mentors who said breast surgery, you can do it as a general surgery. You should have had plenty of cases to be able to do that surgery. And I think it was one of my breast surgeon colleagues who said, it's really important that you did a fellowship. I did not. It's one of my greatest regrets. And fortunately, at my residency, I had the opportunity to do a rotation with Dr. Bleicher at Fox Chase as a resident to see what it was like to live as a fellow and to get that level of experience. And you can't compare fellowship, where it's just an entire year of breast surgery only, to what you get as a resident. So I would advise anybody who wants to do a fellowship, whether it be an MIS or vascular, to do that fellowship, because it's something that you're going to learn the nuances of the trade and something that you're going to be able to take on for the rest of your career.
So normally in the process, you know, as a program director, I know well, we're not allowed to disclose rankings, but I think this is in the past. And so you were our first choice, and you've relayed that we were your first choice in terms of the ranking. So we can say that now post hoc. So what is it that you liked about the program? I mean, you did a rotation here, so you had some experience here, but were there things that sort of differentiated the program that were in line with your thoughts, or what should people think about when they're considering a fellowship?
Yes. The first thing I would say is go somewhere where you would want to be treated yourself. Go somebody where you or your family members have been treated or you would want to be treated, because then you will have pride in that place. And I think that means a lot for anything, whether it be residency, med school, fellowship, et cetera. So I think that's the most important part. Fox Chase was in my backyard. My own family members were treated by you and by some of your colleagues. So that was something that was primary on my list, is would I get what I needed to get out of fellowship, and would I be prideful of where I came from? And the answer was absolutely yes. So Fox Chase was absolutely number one on my list for all those reasons. And having done a rotation in my residency, I saw how truly grateful and compassionate all the fellowship attendings were. And that was something that I just, I was really excited to be involved in.
And we were thrilled to have you. So let me just ask along sort of a personal line. So I know Nina, your wife, is from, her family's in the Boston area. And obviously, is there advice that you would give people with respect to considerations from a personal or family standpoint? Because obviously you've got family in this area, she had family in Boston. Is that something you take into consideration? How did you manage that? Advice for other people who are applying?
Yeah, I managed it perfectly. I'm from the Philadelphia area. She's from the Boston area. So we moved to Boston, right? Clearly, whatever I thought did not matter. Happy wife, happy life, as everybody knows. The compromise was that I could do a year fellowship. She came up to the Boston area. She became an attending here. And I stayed in Philadelphia away from my wife and kids. And it was a sacrifice I was willing to make. It was a sacrifice she was willing to make because we knew that this was the best opportunity for our family. And she knew how much I loved breast surgical oncology. She knew how much I adored Fox Chase, and I wanted to go there for as a fellow. So for us, we did make it work with the understanding that I would come up to the Boston area once I was done and had completed fellowship. But she knew, based on the multiple conversations that I had with her, that this was the best opportunity for us in the current situation at hand.
Right. So obviously, this was a scenario you're relaying that you were very happy with. But are there things that you would advise people to specifically do or not do when they're considering a fellowship or when they're applying?
I would advise everybody to, if they have an opportunity to visit the fellowship program ahead of time and to do an audition rotation, to work with the mentors to see if they can get involved in any research projects, to go there more than just one day, which would be the interview day, to see how you really are able to interact with these people. This is a year of your life, but it's more than just a year of your life. It's going to be a career. You and I have become friends because there are multiple times a week, and I always feel bad about having to do it, but I have to reach out to you and say, Dr. Boettcher, what would you do in this particular situation?
So, and it's never a problem.
And that's the greatest sign of respect, is not only a friendship, but that I can still ask you now, even as an attending who's been in practice for 5 years, hey, what would you do? How would you help manage this patient? So I would say that it's more than just that day-long interview. It's knowing that you're going to be a lifelong mentor or friend or colleague with this person and really getting to know that program and what they stand for. I wouldn't base any decision on geography alone. I would base it on, is this a good fit? Is this somebody I can see myself being friendly with for the rest of my life?
You know, obviously doing a fellowship has many advantages in terms of the education, but are there things that, you know, for somebody that maybe is considering not doing a fellowship and just saying, listen, I don't want the opportunity cost. I don't want to deal with it. I just think I'm going to go out and practice. What would you say, now that you're in practice, has been the thing that you've really obtained from an educational standpoint from fellowship?
I would say the 1 year of lost opportunity cost doesn't pale in comparison to the depth of knowledge that you'll gain from that 1 year. And that is a cost that you can't put a dollar amount on. The amount you learn during that year, not only taking a little bit of expertise from every person you work with. So I've worked with 10 different attendings at that time. And you learn things to do, things not to do, and it makes you a better person, makes you a better surgeon. So not only does it help you understand the data better, I think it translates into taking better care of your patients in the future. So do I think that every single person needs a fellowship? No, I don't. I think you can be a successful physician, successful surgeon without a fellowship, but this is really a great way to fine tune your ability. It's a great way to understand the data, what's important, and it also sets up a mesh and a network for the rest of your career so that you can really become an expert. And when it comes to getting a job, it's really helpful and it becomes much more marketable when you can say, I'm a fellowship trained surgical breast oncologist from this wonderful institution, and the network that you create because of that really opens the doors to a lot of different scenarios. That scenario helped me become a medical director right away. If I didn't have that fellowship, I don't think I would have had nearly as successful ability to get into the job that I have now.
So let's take that a step further. So you're talking about what you get from fellowship. So what should you not expect to get from fellowship? So in other words, are there things that you got, this is your first position at a fellowship, what did you learn outside of fellowship that you just shouldn't expect to get during training?
I got some advice before, and I won't mention who gave me that advice. Say that advice here because it's probably the answer that comes quickest to mind, and that's the real world, once you become an attending, is knowing that your first job will be 20% medicine and 80% politics. So knowing that you have to navigate different personalities, knowing that you have to be a good person, these are things that really can't be taught. But it's no longer just you show up, you do your surgery, you do your clinic, you take great care of patients. There's a lot more fundamental knowledge of creating teams, building relationships, developing programs. That's something that you can watch other people do, but it's not something necessarily that you could have taught me. Now, you did because you're a special person and you always included me in everything, in all the team building meetings, et cetera. But once you become an attending, you realize that people look up to you for advice and you're really the pillar. And if you don't have a positive attitude, if you're not willing to bring people in and show them that they're part of the team, your program will not succeed.
Well, first of all, I'm thrilled that you remember that. So I'm glad, not that I'm surprised. You've listened to things very well and have a remarkable memory, I have to say. So let me ask you this. So the SSO has certain requirements, right, for breast fellowships, for instance. And are there things that you wish that perhaps weren't a part of fellowships, maybe that in general should be added?
This is somewhat of a biased answer, and that's one of the reasons I chose Fox Chase. I did not think that they had anything that was lacking in the ability to become an amazing surgeon. I thought you created a really comprehensive program, and I was really excited to do that. Every part of it, you have to understand, does build blocks to becoming a better person and a better surgeon. So I wouldn't necessarily take anything away. It's very important to have the medical oncology background and the pathology background and the genetics background, et cetera. But things are always evolving, right? And now we talk a lot more about oncoplastics, and that's something that I think breast surgery fellowships need to incorporate, is how we can achieve excellent cosmetic outcomes as well as the oncologic principles. So that's something that wasn't all that well described when I was a fellow. And now I think programs are adopting that a lot more often. But no, I didn't feel at the time that SSO or ASBS didn't emphasize the need to do all those other foundational building blocks to become a really good comprehensive surgical breast oncologist.
All right, so let's move on to mentorship. So what makes a good mentor?
When I think of the best mentors I've had, and I've had a lot of great mentors, I would say the things I think of when I think of you are honesty, protective, supportive. Those are the three things that I think most of you, and I think that makes a great mentor. And as a mentor myself, you have to support the people you take care of. You have to be honest with them. If you're not, it's not helping anybody. You have to be honest about your feedback and be constructive with criticism and be bold. I think that makes a big difference. And nowadays it's hard, because everybody's a little sensitive, but it's important to be very upfront and honest with them and say, these are the expectations. You will see how it will affect you in the future and how these things will translate into better patient care. And being protective in terms of making sure you're always standing up for the people you train so that they become the best that they can be. And I noticed that you always, even if I did something incorrect, you always were protective of me. You always maybe took the heat. And it showed me what it meant to be a good leader and a good mentor. People will often describe autonomy. I think that is fine, but I also think that that's related to being supportive.
So it sounds like I paid you enough to say those things. I'm glad to see it. So, from a mentor standpoint, for people that are starting, when should they look for a mentor? What specific things you mentioned? What's desirable in a mentor? Does it have to be someone in your field? Can it be someone outside your field? Obviously we've had as a mentor-mentee, our relationship was very easy because we were in the same department. I was your program director. Does it have to be like that? Or, what should you look for if, let's say, mentorship is sparse in an individual's own department?
I would say respect, somebody that you respect and somebody that can become a leader to you over the course of your career, somebody that you can call and get honest feedback and advice. Because as you know, being a surgeon, being a physician, it's really hard. There's times where it's emotionally difficult. There's a high burnout for physicians. And you need somebody to run through cases with, difficult, challenging cases and emotions with. So I don't think it needs to be somebody in your field. It helps because they understand what you're going through. But there's a lot of friends I've made over the years, attendings I've had, who have given me advice, and they're a cardiothoracic surgeon. And I think that's really important to have a large network so that they can give you advice from all aspects of medicine and care.
Let me ask you, do you have a mentor now as an attending in practice?
I do not. Mostly because I am the head of the department. So I rely on people like you and people like my residency director as my mentor. I think that may change with time. I look at my colleagues, every single one of them, as mentors. They're all friends and mentors. I look at Tumor Board Conference as mentors. I look at all the people I work with as my mentors. So I think that having a mentor, it's a broad description of somebody that you can rely on, somebody that you can go to for advice, somebody that you trust and respect, that will be open and honest with you about what the next step to do, and somebody that will just listen to you when you need it, because we all need that extra help sometimes.
So does that change? You think those, it sounds like those qualities are pretty universal. Are there differences, do you think, in terms of seeking out a mentor in, if you're going into academics versus if you're going to into community practice?
Yeah, I do. I think as an academic surgeon, you need to have a mentor that may be more research oriented that can help you. Maybe it's helping you get through the process and navigating through the process, because that can be quite challenging, how to become more efficient. Community practice is a whole different ballgame. It might be you have to have much more comprehensive care because there may not be as many resources. So it's important to have mentors in different areas to make you the most successful surgeon.
And when you went through fellowship, so, you know, you went into a specific type of practice. You're obviously the director of a program at a very early stage in your career, which is tremendous. So did the process of fellowship, the education, the exposure that you got, did that change your decision in terms of what type of practice you wanted to go into? Or is this something that you pretty much knew early on, even before you started fellowship?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I thought during fellowship, I was guided to go into more of an academic role. I felt that most people were pushing me towards that because that's where you're at. You're training at an academic institution. When I applied to my first job, I was very open-minded. That was some advice that my wife said, was just look everywhere and see what's a great fit. And it ties into what you've asked before, which is mentorship. And when you're interviewing at places, it's really important, especially when you are young, you're impressionable, you're going to need help, you're going to need mentors. They're going to be your partners, and you're going to have to look to them and say, what would I do in this situation, and not feel embarrassed and feel that they respect you enough to help you, but also that they respect you so that you're going to make the right decisions for patient care. So when I interviewed at places, it was, am I going to be a right fit here? Are they going to help me? Am I going to be able to help them? How are we going to interact? Are we going to become friendly with one another? And I found a great fit, and that just happened to be in a community practice, knowing that it was also tied in with an academic center. So I got a little bit of both. It's almost like a hybrid type of position I have, which is great. I have the community side, which is really nice, but I also have the academic side where I can get involved in different research, have access to teaching medical students as well as residents. So it's really been the best of both worlds for me. But any advice for a fellow would be, just interview at a lot of places. See what it's like. Make sure that you like the people you work with, because you are going to be around those people an awful lot.
And so I think this will be my last question to you, and then I'll turn it over to you. You and I communicate frequently because we've become friends. But in general, are there things that you would say to fellows who are graduating regarding communication with prior attendings, or, you know, do you, should they still stay in touch? What should they do? Questions. What should the relationship with a mentor be after they've graduated? Does it change? Does it not change? What are your thoughts?
I think that it's important to maintain a relationship with everybody you come in contact with, because you never know when that relationship is going to be needed. I've been very, very blessed and fortunate to have had a fellowship program director and fellow relationship evolve into friendship. That was just organic. That just became what it was, because I really appreciate you and like you. And as a person, we became friends. So would I tell people to always become friends with their mentors? If you can, yeah, that'd be great. I think it's always important that you maintain that healthy relationship, because you are going to need these people in the future. There's no doubt about it. So I was just very fortunate that I became friends with you, because you're such a wonderful person. But I always respect and really appreciate all of the hard work and compassion that all the residency attendings, as well as the fellowship attendings, had towards me throughout my entire training.
All right, Sam. So let me hand it over to you as far as questions goes from the mentor standpoint.
So Dr. Bleicher, it sounds like you've been a fellowship director and now become friends with your fellows because of all the things I've said about you being a remarkable person and really enjoying your job. Why did you even want to become a fellowship director? What prompted you to say, I want to become a fellowship director? What about that do you love?
So trainees always keep you on your toes, always. I mean, it's one of those things where if you can do surgery on your own, great. If you can teach somebody to do surgery, you're definitely a better surgeon, I think. It just brings out the best in you. It's hard to teach somebody to be able to do something that you yourself do well. And then there's another layer of that, and that is the ability to sort of watch somebody grow. And that's very, anybody who has kids knows that, you know, you watch somebody start out, you know, with very few skills and you mentor, teach them. And then you become very proud when they have those skills and they can do it on their own. So there's sort of like three layers, right? The ability to make sure that they've got the baseline abilities. The second is the ability to teach them those abilities. The third is then to be able to teach them those abilities and to slowly back away as they learn and give them more independence so that they develop the confidence to do what they want to do. And first of all, that's very rewarding. The second thing is it really ends up being something where fellows and trainees keep you on your toes, right? So they ask outstanding questions. In most cases, I may know the answers, but in some cases, I may not. And that's okay if I don't. I think it's important for trainees to understand that their program directors put their pants on one leg at a time. My mentor, Armando Giuliano, who was very well known for breast, I saw him at points where he was vulnerable in the OR. There was the rare occasion where he was unsure, where he didn't know an answer. And it didn't suggest weakness. What it did was it showed me humanity. And so I was able to say, listen, this is somebody who I immensely respect and look up to, but it's okay if I don't always know something. And I think that that's important for a fellow to see. So there's that interplay of pride in teaching them, the ability to instill confidence in them, and they keep you on your toes, and also to show them that, you know, as you get out there, it's okay to be a human being. That's what it's all about. We all have our times when we may doubt things or when we have to look things up, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Just like the adage says, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a night. You teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And having had just taken a lower level resident through a mastectomy, I can now finally appreciate all the things that you had said. So I hear you and absolutely agree. I mentioned some things why I thought you were such a great mentor and friend. What do you think makes you such a great mentor?
So, well, it's hard for me to sort of talk about what I think I do well, but what I try to do is I try to make sure that, first of all, the person's strengths and weaknesses are, you know, assessed so that you can build upon their weaknesses and reinforce their strengths. I think one of the things that I try to do is I try to make sure that if somebody has a strength, that they know that it's a strength. Because you don't want to go into something and where, you know, there's a tendency in surgery, I think, to just focus on, you know, sort of you beat the person up a little bit, it thickens their skin, they get better at it, and then they're less vulnerable. I think that works to a certain extent, but I think it's also important to make sure that people understand that everybody comes in with strengths. And what are those strengths? And that there's a certain level of confidence that's needed. I try to make sure that they understand that they're always supported. You know, fellows come to me with personal problems. They come to me with even financial problems sometimes. They come to me with insecurities about their knowledge. And I think that it's something that they need to understand that you're there as their program director and there are certain expectations. But at the same time, you're also there as a friend and a colleague, and that they need to be able to trust and confide in you so that when there are issues that you can help them to address them so that they can continue to grow professionally. And there have been times also where I've had people come to me, fellows have come to me with personal problems, and I've tried to help them personally as well. I'm here to help them grow. And so my hope is that in addition to the teaching, which everybody gets teaching, but that we create an environment that strengthens them like as a whole person. And I think that's very important. And that's really makes the difference between a good mentor and someone who's just a teacher.
I agree. You had mentioned fellows coming to you for financial issues. I wish I would have known that. I would have asked you for a couple hundred bucks back then. I absolutely agree with your answer previously. And you said it in such a humble way of all your strengths. And you also need tools in your toolbox to be able to manage the fellows who sometimes, like you said, have a lot of hard questions. And you're looked up to as somebody who has to know the answer. So what tools do you think you need as a program director to be somebody who's successful? And how would you use those tools to ensure that the fellow gets a great experience, but also the patient's being well cared for?
So you have to have drive, you have to have patience, and you really have to like people. Those are probably the things that are most important. From a drive standpoint, being a program director it's time consuming. There's a lot of administrative functions, and ultimately, it's another layer beyond just having a practice. So you have to have the real interest to do it. In terms of other tools, you really need to have the ability to have patience and to see people as human beings. You have to have that desire to help people. And it's like being a parent, you know, sort of like I mentioned before, it's like you bring them up, you have patience, you try to strengthen them, you reinforce what they know. And at the same time, it has to be something that you really enjoy doing. The knowledge part, as far as what you're teaching them, has to be second nature. So I would imagine that it's very difficult to become a program director if you're focused on still learning a lot of the field yourself and trying to sort of hone that down. If that's second nature and you have confidence in that, then the rest of it becomes really easy, because that you just sort of, the clinical part, the stuff you're teaching, you just do it. And then you can focus on the stuff that you enjoy, loving people, helping out people, and supporting them and watching them grow.
That's really well said. From a recent fellow standpoint, one of the things that got me through fellowship was don't get too high on your high days and too low on your low days. Because there are days where you feel like you're king of the world, and there are days where you feel like the smallest person ever, and you don't even want to come to work because you're so embarrassed of something you may have done. So I think that's great to have that support from a fellowship program director, because there are times when the fellows make mistakes and they may need that protection and support to make them feel capable.
It doesn't hurt to have great fellows. So you were loved when you were here. All the staff thought very highly of you. I thought and still think very highly of you. And, you know, we're very lucky, I think, to have the privilege of having people seek us out and rank us highly. And so, but we're also lucky to have people who are really great who are applying, and people that we enjoy training. And so I just want to add to this, you know, the match or the interview process is like speed dating, right? It's sort of like you see the personality and, you know, 8 or 10 minutes or whatever, they see you, and, you know, the knowledge part is there, but you learn whether you're compatible. Our personalities are incredibly compatible, right? Of course, we've become friends after this. I think this, though, you know, there are clearly going to be situations, and we have only very rarely had situations where the fellow and the attending or the program director is not compatible. But I could see situations where somebody might get matched to the program and there is that compatibility issue, and that's very difficult. So what I would say to you is, and I would say to maybe the people out there, don't underestimate the power of personality compatibility with the people you're interviewing with.
I absolutely agree. I think that's the most important part. And not only is the prestige of where you go, but as I mentioned earlier in this interview, it's really important that you get along with the people that you're going to work with for a year. And as I mentioned, and I emphasize, it's not just a year, it's going to be a lifelong relationship. Are you going to rely on these people to help you make clinical decisions? people that you respect and people that you really need to like. That's very important. That kind of ties into the next question I wanted to ask you. I'm sure that fellows will be listening to this. So they'll probably want to know, all right, you're a fellowship program director. You're very successful. You run a wonderful NCI designated cancer center. What are you looking for in fellows? What should they do to strengthen their resume, to become more marketable? What would you tell a fellow?
So first of all, it's always helpful if you know early on what you want to do. If you do, and you're lucky enough to do that, then you start to work on your CV early on. You know, you try to do research, do collaborations, you try to set up research with people either at your institution or if there's somebody outside. If you can't do it at your institution, you ask your mentors at your institution, your residency, to try to help you do that. But then there's also things like audition rotations. So, you know, like you did with us. So you go to a program that you might have an interest in. And we have people come here all the time doing audition rotations. One, they want to see what it's like for breast fellowship, but they also get a sense for the people, and they also get a sense for what you end up having to do both during that fellowship and in fellowships in general. Beyond that, it's really ends up being just trying to, you know, you build on your CV, you read like crazy, you basically try to immerse yourself as much as you can during residency, considering that there are confines of the time that you have. You try to immerse yourself as much as you can so that your knowledge is very good. And, you know, when you show up or when you either at an audition rotation or even during your fellowship, you try to learn as much as you can about this field that you think you're interested in so that you're still going to be learning some of the basics. But the more you know, the more your mentors can refine what you know and then make you an expert. Like the goal is after you're out of fellowship, you want people, when you get out in practice, sort of like you did at your institution, you want people to go, hey, like talk to Nardello. He knows what he's doing. He did a fellowship. He knows he's got his great knowledge. That's what you want. That's the purpose of a fellowship. I'm here to teach you not how to look up something in a book. I'm here to teach you how to figure things out that you can't look up in a book. So in breast, I give the example of, you know, I can tell you what to do about DCIS or invasive cancer, but what I can't show you where to look up in the literature is, how do you do things with multiple cancers? How do you deal with special difficult situations? Those are things that in fellowship, you're going to be taught the general principles of, and you're going to be taught refinement of specifics of care. And that's what really makes a fellowship different than just doing something in residency. It's really bringing you to that next level.
I agree. It really makes you an expert. It makes you not only, makes you to be able to creatively think more about truly complex and complicated situations. And when you're out in the real world, people look at you as the expert because it's very, very important, and they're going to look at you as the expert. So you're the last line for sure. It's been 5 years since I've done my fellowship. I imagine knowing you with how forward thinking you are and how conscientious you are and always wanting to improve things. I've seen you pivot multiple times throughout my fellowship year and trying to improve the experience and education. What have you think has changed over those 5 years in terms of how you run the fellowship now? What has changed?
Certainly we keep up to date. So certainly the curriculum changes. We now add things to try to make it better in line with the societal requirements. So for instance, we are now doing we're doing lectures in breast every other week. And then those are separate from the complex general surgical oncology fellowship lectures. So those used to be all together. We've now separated that, pulled it apart so that everybody can attend everything, and it's much more specific, more didactic. We're also, in addition to expanding, which provides fellows, and this is another thing I think that fellows should learn or residents should know, when you go to a program, it's nice to go to a program with one person as a mentorship, but it's also nice to have a series of people who you learn different things from. So as you know, Sam, like you learned mastectomy techniques in different ways from each of us. I use tumescence, another colleague used tumescence and a knife. I use the scissors. Another person used the Bovie. One person used tumescence in the Bovie. One person used the Bovie. I mean, so you've got all these different ways of doing things. And so you incorporate that into your repertoire. So I think that, so we're also expanding. We're hiring additional people. And so that will also benefit the fellows. From my personal standpoint, I've also learned to be able to coach better. I think we all get better as we get older. I'm coaching better from afar. So I'm able to provide sufficient supervision, but also be able to do it in a less hovering way. And so I think it's important, you know, you see this in people who are self-aware and, you know, you are, I am. And so the idea is that no matter what stage you are, you're always trying to do better. And so I think that we've made changes both individually as attendings here, and we've also made changes from the fellowship standpoint.
Where do you think fellowship programs are headed in the next 5 or 10 years?
So there is a concerted effort. Certainly, I can tell you at the SSO, and I'm one of the things that I am, which I haven't mentioned on this call, is that I'm currently the chair of the program directors for the continent for the SSO. So we have all of the breast program directors, and we sit on a committee, and there's a chair and vice chair, and I currently sit as chair. And one of the things that we've been trying to do is really tighten up those requirements to make sure that there's a value to the fellows, and making sure that what they do and their responsibilities is not, it's less and less busy work and more of educational value. And I think that that's probably a trend overall. I think I see it as a trend in the CGSO, Complex General Surgical Oncology environment. And I think that it tends to be a trend in other fellowships as well. So the idea being that you tighten it up and you make that year or 2 years or 3 years, whatever it is, really a value, and much more a value than just going to some great institution as a general surgeon and just trying to do your own cases at that location.
I think the only thing I would change is I'd make it longer. I had such an enjoyable year. I learned so much, but I want all the fellows to understand once you're out, you're still learning. It's a lifelong learning experience. And I'm sure you would agree with that, that you're always learning. You always have to be better. You always have to read. You always have to acknowledge that there's changes in the way we do things. And it's important to stay on top of it, because at the end of the day, you're the expert. People are going to come to you from all over for the best care possible. And you owe it to your patients, to your staff, to constantly learn and always be better. Never be complacent. The second you do, that's when it's time to say, pass on the reins to somebody else.
And I agree with you. I think that all of the things you said are correct. I would say that there's a variety of opinions about the length, obviously. Like, you are an avid learner. You are constantly striving to, you have like this thirst for knowledge. For people that, you know, that the length of fellowship is something that people have discussed a lot, and it tends to be, it's variable. When you lengthen it, some people get say, oh, you know, I don't think I want to do 2 years, or, oh, you know, I want to do longer. So it's a tough thing. I hear you. I think that a longer fellowship definitely has advantages, but it would be interesting to see sort of what the effect would be on the applicant pool.
It's fascinating. If you made it longer, what would that mean for people? Sure. Yeah, that's something that you could poll and figure out. I would say that 1 year is probably what people expect based on other surgical fellowship specialties. But me personally, I thought there's always room for more education. I didn't feel after the year that I had a knowledge gap, though. There was nothing that I felt like, oh, I wish I had more time with this. It's just a matter of, it's such a great year for the fellows that they're able to learn by such wonderful people and such experts in the field and take care of really, really complicated patients. That's the reason why I feel that it could be longer, but no other reason than that. I didn't feel that it wasn't enough of time to get what you needed to. It's just that there's so many interesting things, and those that go into academic medicine or go into surgery are lifelong learners and will always crave that extra knowledge.
Well, we have offered to individuals in the past who've expressed the specific desire, when we have the funding, to stay an extra year to do research. But again, we're looking at how we could potentially do that every year, but that becomes a cost issue. And obviously you have to have people who are interested in that. So I hear you, I agree with you. And you know, for individuals who would like to do that, I think it'd be great to be able to provide that opportunity.
I did want to ask really quick, because I know we've been running long, you've both been very generous with your time, but you're both in a position to do hiring. So, and I know Fox Chase is an NCI designated center. Does that kind of thing matter so much for fellows who are looking for jobs post-fellowship, that they went to someplace like, let's say, Fox Chase or Penn Abramson that's got that NCI designation, or does that, is that kind of a value add, but it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference?
So we are actually, turns out we are actually hiring now. And in terms of what it means in terms of their training, yes, the training, where they've done training is important. Now, that having been said, there's requirements for the fellowships broadly. And so all fellowships, if they do any fellowship, they're going to have qualified and taken those qualifications and gone through the required rotations and should have the adequate knowledge if they've graduated from a certified fellowship. Are there fine differences between programs? There are. So that might make a difference, but I think by and large, and the individual's report card, so to speak, is really their CV, right? So in other words, you can go to Penn or Fox Chase versus going to someplace else, maybe a community program, but that will end up being secondary to what you've accomplished during fellowship and during your residency. So if you're sitting there putting out publications, doing great on your absites, you've got great scores, you're cranking out really good questions and really adding to the literature, then that program itself is going to be secondary. If all things are equal, then potentially the program you graduated from would make a difference. Sam, do you have anything, any thoughts on that?
I agree that every fellowship program will have already set standards. So there's going to be no fellow that comes out of fellowship that's not going to come from a wonderful place. When I'm interviewing candidates who are looking for a job position, I look much less at where they came from and more of what they did and what they accomplished and what their letters of recommendation look like from the people that they worked with. And also, are they going to be somebody easy to work with? And am I going to trust them with the patients that they're going to be taking care of on mine or of the programs itself? So much less where they came from, more of what they've accomplished. Every single breast fellowship is a great program. There's really no bad program.
Yeah, I would echo that. I mean, I'm entirely in agreement with you. The personality is a huge issue. The fit, just like fellowship, is a huge issue when fellows are looking for jobs. There's just no question. And that becomes important because the goal is that you go to work and you enjoy working, not just in what you do, but with the people you work with. I mean, I love my colleagues. It's a great environment. And so that's the difference between dreading going to work and loving going to work. So I think, Sam, you hit it on the head.
Yeah, love what you do and you never work a day in your life. And we spend a lot of time at work, whether it's 40 hours, 60 hours, 80 hours, or 100 hours. The reality is we spend more time at work than we do at home. And it's so important that you like the people you work with, that you respect the people that you work with, because it's work if you don't. And it becomes enjoyable and pleasurable and gives purpose to your life if you like who you work with. And I think that also translates into what we do is better patient care. When the patients feel that they're part of a family, that they're part of a group of people that get along well with one another, then they just feel better. And I think research has showed that they have better outcomes as well.
I would add one more thing that a mentor of mine in medical oncology during my fellowship said that I always remember, and it's work where you wanna live, don't live where you wanna work. The job is important, but if you're in a place that you're unhappy, then it doesn't matter how good the job is. You have to, ultimately in life, you have to have this, nobody's really self-actualized in every area, right? So you can love your job and love your personal life and personal situation. But ultimately, probably 95% of people are they generally like both. If you have the ability to love your job and get a phenomenal job, you want to make sure it's not completely at the cost of your personal life. So I would say, the aphorism that I just gave is really about, finding a balance. So if you want to be in a big city, be in a big city and look for a job in a big city. If you want to be in the country, same thing. But again, work where you want to live. Don't live where you want to work.
Prospective fellows should interview in lots of places to find the best fit, but that can be expensive. So is there a way to limit those costs, so you can take a look at multiple programs?
So with respect to costs, so the program directors have actually been very attuned to this recently. And at the Society of Surgical Oncology, as an example, we've really tried to make this easier for fellows. The pandemic, despite all its horrible effects, one positive effect from it has been this Zoom kind of thing, right? And so now interviews are conducted virtually by Zoom. That has some disadvantages, like you're not necessarily at the place where you're interviewing and, shaking people's hands and maybe seeing some of the nuances in their behavior, but you can always go visit if you really want to for those top few organizations or institutions. But right now, in terms of the cost, things are now done by virtual interviews. So that really makes it much less costly and much easier for fellows to really interview at a variety of places.
Well, I just want to say thank you for all that you do, not for me, but for all the patients that you've impacted from all the fellows you've taught. And I think that's the greatest gift, is that you have positively impacted hundreds of thousands of patients from the lessons you've taught your fellows. So thank you. We appreciate you. You're a great person.
Well, thank you, Sam. And I have to tell you, everybody here loves you and misses you. And so it was very enjoyable having you. And we're obviously, you know, from my standpoint, I've told you this many times, I'm very proud of what you've accomplished, like you beyond what you know. So we view our fellows, and I don't say this in any condescending way, we view our fellows as our children. Now, you've become my friend. So it's not like, you know, but during the process, you know, it's like the pride that you experience from having a fellow who's had an interest and a good job and who you're just so proud to have had at your program is something that is very hard to put in words. But I would say that you fit that perfectly. And so immeasurably gratified that we're still in touch and that you came here and that you chose us for fellowship and that you're doing so well.
Well, thank you for saying those kind words. Thank you, Uncle Av, for putting on this wonderful podcast. We appreciate it very much, the opportunity to talk about our experience.
That's all we have time for today. Thanks again to Drs. Bleicher and Nardello, and thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Onc Live is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Onc Live and at Onc Live SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Onc Live and Onc Live State of the Science Summit, and follow our Onc Live page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of Onc Live On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onc Live On Air.